If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I've always hated the smell of gun oil. It clings to everything it touches, soaking deep into the fibers of my clothes, the lining of my backpack, the coarse hair on the back of my hands. Yet, here I am, kneeling on the cracked linoleum of our mudroom, a Remington 308 laid across my thighs, and the stench of gun oil sharp in my nostrils. The early morning light barely scratches at the edges of the blinds, dim and gray like the belly of a dead fish. My dad, Frank, is in the kitchen, clattering around with the coffee pot and mumbling under his breath. Today we're heading up to the woods of northern Michigan, same as we did every year before Leah. Before we lost her. I can't help but feel the old scars throbbing as I load bullets into the magazine. It's been 10 years since that hunting trip, the one that tore my family in two before and after. Before, when Leah's laughter was a constant soundtrack to our lives. After, when every silence was filled with her absence. We were just kids back then. I was 10, Leah was 8. It was supposed to be a typical hunting trip, one of those bonding experiences Dad was always talking about. But things went wrong. We got separated from Dad somehow. One minute we were following him, but the next we were lost. The dense woods closing in around us. Dad says when he found me, I was huddled under a fallen tree, my eyes wide, my body frozen. All I could mutter through chattered teeth was, "Dog man." It was only later, after the search parties had combed through every thicket and hollow, that they found her. What remained of Leah was barely recognizable, but the evidence of a brutal mauling undeniable. The authorities concluded it was likely a bear attack, but Dad, he never accepted that explanation. He had seen the tracks, too large and oddly shaped for any bear. As I load another round, the memory flashes, unbidden and unwelcome. Large, hairy, clawed hands reached out towards us, impossibly big, grotesque in their form. Yet, the rest of the creature eludes me. A shadow just beyond the edge of my recall, leaving me with nothing but fragmented terrors and Leah's haunting, echoing screams. My mind blocked most of it out. A self-defense mechanism, I guess. For years after that day, sleep was a battleground. I'd wake up in strange places, in kitchen floor, backyard, even at the edge of the nearby creek. My therapist said it was my mind's way of trying to resolve the unresolved, to wander back through the woods searching for Leah, but all I found in those sleepless nights was a deeper sense of loss. It took time, a lot of therapy and patience I didn't know I had, but the sleepwalking did eventually stop. I guess I started to find some semblance of peace. I have mostly moved on with my life. The fragmentary memories of that day are still there, lurking in the corners of my mind, but they don't dominate my thoughts like they used to. I just finished my sophomore year at Michigan State, majoring in environmental science. As for Dad, the loss of Leah broke him. He became a shell of himself. It destroyed his marriage with Mom. He blamed himself for letting us out of his sight, for not protecting Leah. His life took on a single, consuming focus. Finding the creature that killed her. He read every book, every article on cryptids and unexplained phenomena. He mapped sightings, connected dots across blurry photos and shaky testimonies of the Dog Man. But as the 10th anniversary of Leah's death approaches, Dad's obsession has grown more intense. He started staying up late, poring over his maps and notes, muttering to himself about patterns and cycles. He's convinced that the Dogman reappears every 10 years, and this is our window of opportunity to finally hunt it down. I'm not nearly as convinced. The whole Dogman thing seems like a coping mechanism, a way for Dad to channel his guilt and grief into something tangible, something he can fight against. But I decided to tag along on this trip, partly to keep an eye on him, mostly because a small part of me hopes that maybe, just maybe, we'll find some kind of closure out there in the woods. I finished loading the rifle and set it aside, standing up to stretch my legs. I wiped my greasy hands on an oil rag, trying to get rid of the smell. The early morning light is starting to seep into the room, casting long shadows across the floor. Dad comes out of the kitchen with 2 thermoses of coffee in hand. His eyes are bleary and tired.
"You ready, Ryan?"
he asks, handing me a thermos, his voice rough from too many sleepless nights.
"Yeah, I'm ready,"
I reply, trying to sound more confident than I felt. We load our gear into the truck, the weight of our supplies and weapons a physical reminder of the burden we carry. The drive from Lansing across the lower peninsula is long and quiet. The silence between us filled with unspoken memories and unresolved grief. The drive north is a blur of highway lines and the dull hum of the engine. I drift off, the landscape outside blending into a haze. In my sleep, fragments of that day with Leah replay like scattered pieces of a puzzle. I see her smile, the way she tugged at my sleeve, eager to explore. The sunlight filters through the trees in sharp, jagged streaks. Then, the memory shifts, darker, disjointed. Leah's voice echoes, a playful laugh turning into a scream that pierces the air, the crunch of leaves underfoot as something heavy moves to the underbrush. I see a shadow, large and looming, not quite fitting the shape of any creature I know. Then, something darker creeps into the dream. Something I've never allowed myself to remember clearly. Before I can see what it is, I wake up with a start as the truck jerks slightly on a round patch of road. Dad glances over.
"Bad dream?"
he asks. I nod, rubbing the sleep from my eyes, the remnants of the dream clinging to me like the cold.
"Yeah, just thinking about Leah," I manage to say.
As we drive, Dad attempts to bridge the silence with small talk. He asks about my finals, my plans for the summer, anything to keep the conversation going. His voice carries a forced cheerfulness, but it's clear his heart isn't in it. I respond when necessary, my answers brief, my gaze fixed on the passing scenery.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The landscape changes as we head further north, from flat expansions to rolling hills dotted with dense patches of forest. It's beautiful country, the kind that reminds you how vast and wild Michigan can be. But today, it just feels oppressive, like it's closing in on us. We finally arrive at the cabin, nestled deep in the woods, its weathered wood blending seamlessly with the surrounding trees. The place hasn't changed much since the last time I was here. A relic from another time, filled with the echoes of our past. I can still see Leah running around the porch, her laughter ringing out into the forest. Dad parks the truck, and we step out into the crisp air. The smell of pine and damp earth fills my nostrils. We start unloading our gear, the tension between us palpable.
"Let's get this inside,"
Dad says, his voice gruff as he hefts a duffel bag onto his shoulder. I nod, grabbing my own bag and following him to the cabin. Inside, it's a mix of old and new, the same rustic furniture, but with new hunting gear and maps strewn across the table. Dad's obsession is evident in every corner of the room, a constant reminder of why we're here. As we unpack, we exchange strained attempts at normalcy. He talks about the last cryptid sightings he's read about, his eyes lighting up with a fervor that both worries and saddens me.
"Did you hear about the sighting up near Alpena?"
he asks, laying out his maps on the table.
"Yeah, you mentioned it,"
I reply, trying to muster some enthusiasm.
"Do you really think there's something to it?"
Dad's eyes meet mine, and for a moment I see a flicker of doubt, but it's quickly replaced by grim determination.
"I have to believe it, Ryan. It's the only thing that makes sense."
We finish unpacking, the silence between us growing heavier with each passing minute. I step outside to clear my head, the cool air a welcome relief. The sun is starting to set, casting long shadows across the clearing. I can't shake the feeling of unease.
"You can take the upstairs room,"
Dad mutters. His voice is strained, trying to sound normal, but it's clear the weight of the past is heavy on him. I nod, hauling my backpack up the creaking stairs to the small bedroom that I used to share with Leah. The room feels smaller now, or maybe I've grown too much since those innocent days. I unpack silently, setting my things aside. The bed is stiff and cold under my touch. As I settle in, I can't help but glance at the corner where Leah and I would huddle together, whispering secrets and making plans for adventures that would never happen. I push the thoughts away, focusing on the practicalities of unpacking. After settling in, I go back downstairs to find Dad loading up a backpack with supplies for our hunt. The intensity in his eyes is palpable, his hands moving with practiced precision. I know this routine. It's one he's perfected over countless solo trips since that fateful day.
"We'll head out early," he says, not looking up from his task. "Got him in the most of the daylight."
I nod, though unease curls in my stomach. I'm not just worried about what we might find or not find out there. I'm worried about him. Each year, the obsession seems to carve him out a bit more, leaving less of the dad I know.
The morning air is sharp with the scent of pine and wet earth as Dad and I head into the deeper parts of the forest.
The terrain is rugged, familiar in its untamed beauty, but there's a tension between us that makes the landscape feel alien. Dad moves with a purposeful stride, his eyes scanning the woods around us. Every snap of a twig, every rustle in the underbrush seems to draw his attention. He's on edge, and it puts me on edge too. As we walk, my mind drifts back to that day, 10 years ago. I can almost hear Leah's voice echoing through the trees, her high-pitched calling as she darts ahead.
"Catch me, Ryan."
I remember how the sunlight filtered through the leaves, casting dancing shadows on the ground. Those memories are so vivid, so tangible. It feels like I could just turn a corner and see her there, waiting for us. Dad suddenly stops and kneels, examining the ground. He points out a set of tracks that are too large for a deer, with an unusual gait pattern.
"It's been here, right? I'm telling you, it's close,"
he whispers, a mixture of excitement and something darker in his voice. I nod, though I'm not sure what to believe. Part of me wants to dismiss it as a grief-fueled obsession, but another part The part that heard Leah's scream and saw something monstrous in the woods that day isn't so sure. As we continue, Dad's comments became increasingly cryptic.
You know, they say the dog man moves in cycles, drawn to certain places, certain times, like it's tied to the land itself.
He muses, more to himself than me. His fixation on the creature has always been intense, but now it borders on mania. We set up a makeshift blind near a clearing where Dad insists the creature will pass. Hours drag by with little to see but the occasional bird or distant deer. The sun rises higher into the sky, casting long, slender shadows to the dense canopy. I shift uncomfortably in my spot, the forest floor hard and unyielding beneath me. My eyes dart between the trees, hoping to catch a glimpse of something, anything to break the monotony. Dad, on the other hand, remains steadfast, his gaze fixed on the tree line, as if he can will the dog man into existence by sheer force of will. A bird chirps nearby, startling me. I sigh and adjust my grip on the rifle. I glance over at Dad.
Anything?
I ask, more out of boredom than genuine curiosity.
Not yet,
he replies, his voice tight.
But it's out there. I know it.
I nod, even though I'm not sure I believe him. The forest seems too quiet, too still. Maybe we're chasing ghosts. As the sun begins its descent, the forest is bathed in a warm, golden light. The air cools, and a breeze rustles the leaves. I shiver, more from anticipation than the cold. The long hours of sitting and waiting are starting to wear on me.
Let's call it a day for now,
Dad says, finally, his voice heavy with disappointment.
We'll head back to the cabin, get some rest, and try again tomorrow.
I stand and stretch, feeling the stiffness in my muscles. We pack up our gear in silence and start the trek back to the cabin. The walk is long and quiet. The only sounds are the crunch of leaves underfoot and the distant calls of birds settling in for the night.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Dinner is a quiet affair, both of us lost in our thoughts. I try to make small talk, asking Dad about his plans for tomorrow, but it feels forced. We clean up in silence. After dinner, I retreat to the small bedroom. The fatigue from the day's hike has settled into my bones, but sleep still feels like a distant hope. I lie down, staring at the ceiling, the room cloaked in darkness, save for the silver moonlight creeping through the window. Downstairs, I hear the faint sound of Dad moving around, likely unable to sleep himself. I drift into sleep, but it's not restful. My dreams pull me back to that fateful day in the woods. Leah's voice is clear and vibrant, her laughter echoing through the trees. She looks just as she did then. Bright-eyed and full of life, her blonde hair catching the sunlight as she runs ahead of me.
Come on, Rye. You can't catch me.
She taunts, her voice playful and teasing. I chase after her, but the scene shifts abruptly. The sky darkens, the woods around us growing dense and foreboding. Leah's laughter fades, replaced by a chilling silence. I see her ahead, standing still, her back to me.
Leah,
I call out, my voice trembling. She turns slowly, her eyes wide and filled with fear.
Ryan, you have to remember,
she says, her voice barely above a whisper.
It wasn't what you think. You need to know the truth.
Leah's words hang in the air, cryptic and unsettling. Before I can respond, she turns and starts running again, her fingers becoming a blur among the trees. Panic rises in my chest, and I sprint after her, my feet pounding against the forest floor.
Leah, wait!
I shout, desperation lacing my voice. The forest around me seems to close in, the trees towering and twisted, shadows dancing menacingly in the dim light. I push forward, trying to keep her in sight, but she's too fast, slipping away like a wisp of smoke. Suddenly, there's a rustle, a flash of movement in the corner of my vision. Leah screams, a sound that pierces through the heavy silence. It happens too quickly. I can't see what it is. Only a dark blur that snatches her up.
Leah!
My voice breaking. I stumble, falling to my knees as the forest spins around me. My heart races, and the terror is so real, so visceral, that it pulls me back to that awful day. The one that changed everything. I jolt awake, my breath coming in ragged gasps. I sit up, wiping the cold sweat from my forehead as I try to steady my breathing. The room is still dark. The shadows cast by the moonlight seem to flicker and dance on the walls. My heart is still racing from the nightmare, the echo of Leah's scream lingering in my ears. As I struggle to calm down, the floorboards outside my room creak. The door opens slowly, and I see the silhouette of my dad in the doorway, a bowie knife in his hand, his posture tense.
Dad, what the hell are you doing?
I whisper, my voice shaking. He hisses, holding up a hand to silence me.
I heard something. Something moving around in the cabin. Stay quiet.
I swallow hard, my mouth dry. I glance at the clock on the nightstand. It's just past 3 a.m. The cabin is silent. The kind of deep, oppressive silence that makes every small sound seem louder. I can't hear anything out of the ordinary, but Dad's expression is deadly serious. He motions for me to get up. And I do, moving as quietly as I can. My heart is racing, a mix of lingering fear from the dream and the sudden sharp anxiety of the present moment. Dad leads the way, stepping cautiously out of the bedroom and into the hallway, the knife held ready in front of him. We move through the cabin, checking each room in turn. The living room is empty, the furniture casting long shadows in the dim moonlight. The kitchen is just as we left it. The plates from dinner still drying on the counter. Everything seems normal, untouched. We finish our sweep of the cabin without finding anything amiss. The silence is heavy, punctuated only by our soft footfalls. I can see the tension in Dad's frame, his grip on the knife unwavering. After checking the last room, we pause in the dimly lit hallway, the air thick with unspoken questions.
There's nothing here.
I say, my voice low.
Are you sure you heard something?
He looks at me, his eyes searching for something in my face.
I heard a growl, deep and close. It was right outside the window.
Maybe it was just an animal outside, a raccoon, or something,
I suggest, although the certainty in his voice makes me doubt my own reassurance.
No. It wasn't like that. It was different.
He insists, his voice tense. I nod, not wanting to argue, but the seeds of Ore are planted deep. The look in his eyes is sending a chill down my spine. It's not just fear. It's desperation. The kind of desperation that comes from years of chasing shadows and finding nothing. I can see the toll this hunt has taken on him. The way it's worn him down. Turned him into a man I barely recognize. We head back to our rooms. As I lie down, my mind races with thoughts of my dad. I can't help but wonder if he's losing it, if the years of grief and guilt have finally pushed him over the edge. Dad wasn't always like this. Before Leah's death, he was the kind of father who took us fishing, helped with homework, and told terrible jokes that made us groan and laugh at the same time. He was solid, dependable, but losing Leah changed him. The guilt twisted him into someone I barely recognize. Someone driven by a need for answers, for closure, that may never come. I try to sleep, but my thoughts keep me awake. I can hear Dad moving around downstairs, probably pacing or double-checking the locks. His paranoia has become a constant presence, and I don't know how to help him. I don't even know if I can help him. I don't even know if I can help him. The next morning, the sunlight filters weakly through the cabin windows, casting a pale light that does little to lift the heavy mood. I drag myself out of bed, feeling the exhaustion of another restless night. Dad is already up, hunched over his maps at the kitchen table, his eyes bloodshot from lack of sleep. "Morning," I mumble, rubbing the sleep from my eyes and pouring myself a cup of coffee. "Did you sleep at all?" He shakes his head, not looking up from his notes.
"Not much. I couldn't stop thinking about what I heard last night."
I sip my coffee, trying to shake off the remnants of my nightmare.
"Maybe it was just an animal, Dad. We're deep in the woods, after all."
He finally looked up.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender, juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For a limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
His eyes intense. "Ryan, I know what I heard. It wasn't just an animal. It was something else."
I sigh, not wanting to argue.
"Okay, fine, Dad. What's the plan for today?"
"We're going back out. I found some tracks yesterday, and I want to follow them. See where they lead."
I nod, feeling a mix of apprehension and a resignation. I can see how much this means to him, how desperate he is for any kind of lead.
"All right, let's get packed and head out."
We spent the morning preparing, loading up our gear and double-checking our supplies. Dad is meticulous, going over everything with a fine-toothed comb. I try to match his focus, but my mind keeps drifting back to Leah and the dream I had. Her words echo in my head, cryptic and unsettling. "You need to know the truth." We set off into the woods, the air crisp and cool. The forest is alive with the sounds of birds and rustling leaves, but it all feels distant, like background noise to the tension between us. Dad leads the way, his eyes scanning the ground for any sign of the tracks he found yesterday. As we walk, I can't help but notice how erratically he's acting. He mutters to himself, his eyes darting around as if expecting something to jump out at us. His grip on his rifle is tight, his knuckles white.
"Dad, are you okay?"
I ask, trying to keep my voice steady. He glances at me, his expression unreadable.
"I'm fine, just focused."
He stops frequently to examine the ground or the bark of trees, pointing out marks and signs that seem meaningless to me.
"Look at this,"
he says, crouching down to examine a broken branch.
"See how it snapped? That's not a deer or a bear. There's something bigger, stronger."
I crouched next to Dad, squinting at the broken branch. To me, it just looks like a regular broken branch, the kind you see all over the forest.
"I don't know, Dad, it just looks like a branch to me,"
I say, trying to keep my voice neutral. Dad's eyes flicker with frustration.
"You're not looking close enough. It's the way it snapped. Too clean, too deliberate. Something did this."
I nod, not wanting to argue.
"Okay, sure, but even if you're right, it could be anything. A storm, another hunter."
His expression hardens.
"I know what I'm looking for. This is different."
I sigh, feeling the weight of the past and the tension between us pressing down on me.
"Dad, I had a dream last night about Leah."
The words hang in the air between us, heavy and fraught with unspoken emotions. Dad's eyes widen, then he straightens up, his entire demeanor shifting.
"What kind of dream? What did you see?"
His voice is urgent, almost desperate.
"It was strange. We were in the woods, like we are now, but everything felt different. Leah was there, running ahead of me, laughing. Then she stopped and told me I needed to know the truth, that it wasn't what I thought.
Dad grabs my shoulder, his grip tight.
What else did she say? Did she tell you anything specific? Anything about the creature?
I shake my head, feeling a chill run down my spine. No. That was it. She just said I needed to know the truth. And then she was gone.
Dad's grip on my shoulders tightens, and his eyes bore into mine with a mixture of desperation and hope.
Ryan, you have to try to remember. Think hard. What did the creature look like? Did you see anything else?
I pull back, slightly, uneasy with his intensity.
Dad, I told you, I don't remember. It was just a dream, a nightmare, really. My mind's probably just mixing things up.
He let go of me and runs a hand through his hair, looking frustrated and lost.
Dreams can be important. They can hold memories we've buried deep. Please, try to remember. This could be a sign, a clue.
I rub my temples, feeling the beginnings of a headache.
I've tried, okay? I've tried for years to piece together what happened that day, but it's all just fragments, like pieces of a puzzle that don't fit. The dream, it felt real, but I don't think it's telling me anything new.
Dad's face falls, and he looks older than I've ever seen him. He turns away, staring into the forest, as if it holds all the answers. As we make our way back to the cabin, the sun begins to set, casting long shadows to the trees. The air grows colder, and I shiver, pulling my jacket tighter around me. Dad is silent, lost in his thoughts, his face drawn and haggard. Back at the cabin, we unload our gear once again in silence. Dad disappears into his room, muttering something about going over his notes. I decide to explore the cabin, hoping to find something that might help me understand what's going on with him. In the attic, I find a box of old family photos and documents. As I sift through the contents, I come across a worn journal with Dad's handwriting on the cover. Curiosity gets the better of me, and I open it, flipping through the pages. The journal is filled with notes and sketches, detailing his obsession with the Dogman. But there's something else. Entries that talk about Leah, about that day in the woods. His handwriting becomes more erratic, the words harder to read. One entry stands out, dated just a few days after Leah's death. June 15th, 2013.
It was supposed to be a normal trip. Keep him close, Frank. I kept telling myself. But I failed. Leah's gone, and it's my fault. I heard her scream, saw the shadows. I tried to get to her, but the thing, it was there. Too fast, too strong. My hands. Blood everywhere. No one will believe me. I can't even believe myself. I have to find it. I have to protect Ryan. I have to make it right. God, what have I done?
Before I can read further, the attic door creaks open, and Dad's voice slices through the stillness.
What are you doing up here?
His tone is sharp, almost panicked. I turn to see him standing in the doorway, his face pale and his eyes wide with something between anger and fear. I clutch the journal to my chest, my mind racing.
I found this. I was just trying to understand.
In an instant, he crosses the room and snatches the journal from my hand. His grip is tight, his knuckles white.
You had no right,
he growls, his voice trembling.
Dad, I just wanted to know the truth.
I shout, frustration boiling over.
What really happened to Leah?
His eyes flash with a mix of rage and anguish, and before I can react, he slaps me across the face. The force of it knocks me off balance, and I stumble backwards, my cheek stinging. For a moment, there's a stunned silence. We both stand there, breathing hard, the air thick with tension.
I'm sorry,
Dad says, finally, his voice barely above a whisper.
I didn't mean to.
He trails off, clutching the journal to his chest like a lifeline.
I touch my cheek, feeling the heat from the slap, and take a deep breath, trying to steady myself.
Dad, what aren't you telling me? What really happened that day?
Stay out of it, Ryan.
Dad growls, his eyes dark with anger.
You don't know what you're messing with.
He turns and storms out of the attic. I'm left, standing there, my cheek throbbing, my mind racing.
What the fuck is going on? What really happens to Leah? And what is Dad so afraid of?
That night, I slept with my rifle within arm's reach, more afraid of my dad than any dog man. The slap still burns on my cheek, and the look in his eyes, rage, fear, something darker, haunts me. I lie awake, listening to the creaks and groans of the old cabin, every sound amplified in the stillness. Eventually, exhaustion pulls me under, and I fall into a restless sleep. The dream returns, vivid and unsettling. I'm back in the woods, chasing after Leah. Her laughter echoes to the trees, a haunting reminder of happier times. This time, though, I push myself harder, refusing to let her slip away.
Ryan, catch me!
She calls, her voice playful.
I'm coming, Leah!
I shout, my legs pumping, my breath coming in ragged gasps. The forest around us is a twisted, shadowy maze, the trees seeming to close in on us. Leah's figure becomes clearer, her blonde hair catching the dim light filtering through the canopy. She stops, suddenly, turning to face me, her eyes wide with fear.
Leah, what is it?
I ask, my voice trembling.
Look behind you,
she whispers, her voice barely audible. I turn slowly, dread creeping up my spine. In the shadows, I see a figure, its form indistinct and shifting. It's not quite animal, not quite human, something in between. The sight of it sends a jolt of terror through me, and I wake up with a start, my breath coming in ragged gasps. I'm not in my bed. The ground beneath me is cold and hard, the smell of damp earth filling my nostrils. Panic rises as I realize I've sleepwalked into the forest. I scramble to my feet, my eyes adjusting to the dim light. The moon casts a pale glow over the surroundings, revealing what looks like a long abandoned animal lair. The walls are covered in giant claw marks, deep gouges in the wood and earth. The air is heavy with a scent of decay, and a chill runs through me. I can't shake the feeling that I'm being watched. Carefully, I start to move, my eyes scanning the ground, desperate for a familiar landmark. That's when I see them. Faded scraps of fabric caught on the jagged edges of the underbrush. My steps falter, a sense of dread washing over me as I bend down to examine them. The fabric is torn, weathered by time and the elements, but unmistakably familiar. It's part of Leah's jacket, the bright pink one she wore on the day she disappeared. As I strain to make sense of it all, a rustling sound behind me snaps my focus. My heart leaps into my throat. I spin around, my hand instinctively reaching for the rifle I don't have, because, of course, I didn't bring it in my unconscious state. The shadowy figure that emerges from the trees is unsettlingly familiar, mirroring the menacing forms of my nightmares. But as it steps into the moonlight, I recognize the worn jacket, the weary posture. It's Dad.
Ryan!
He calls out, his voice a mix of relief and stern concern.
I've been looking everywhere for you. What the hell are you doing out here?
I exhale slowly. the terror ebbing away as reality sets back in.
I don't know, Dad. I must have sleptwalked again.
My voice is shaky, my early dreams still clinging to the edges of my consciousness. Dad stares at me in disbelief.
You haven't sleptwalked since you were a kid, right? This isn't just a coincidence.
His eyes dart around, taking in the surroundings. The eerie, claw-marked den, the unsettling quiet of the woods.
How did you even find this place?
I shake my head, struggling to find an answer.
I don't know, Dad. I woke up here.
The uncertainty in my voice does nothing to ease the tension. His eyes lock onto the tattered remains of Leah's jacket in my hands. Then something inside him snaps. The color drains from his face as he stumbles a few steps backward.
This is where it happened,
he murmurs, his voice barely a whisper.
This is where we found Leah. I thought you said you don't remember anything from that night,
he says accusingly.
I swear, Dad, I don't know anything about this place.
I insist, my own heart pounding.
It was you, wasn't it? You've been hiding this place from me.
His voice is frantic.
You, last night, the growling, it was you.
His voice rises, tinged with hysteria. I step back, my pulse racing, feeling the chill of the night and the weight of his accusation.
Dad, I don't know what you're talking about.
No,
he interrupts, his voice breaking as he points a trembling finger at me.
You knew. You always knew. It was you, Ryan. All these years, the evidence was right there. But I refused to see it. You were the dog man. You killed Leah.
His words hit me like a physical blow, absurd and horrifying in their implications.
Dad, you're not making any sense. You're talking crazy. I was just a little kid. How can I...
I protest, my voice shaky. He steps closer, his presence looming over me, the outline of his figure distorted by the shadow of the trees.
Think about it. It all makes sense now. You led us here to this place because you remember, because you did it.
Dad, stop it!
I shout, my heart pounding in my chest.
You're scaring me. You need help, professional help. This isn't you.
But he's beyond reason, his eyes wild with a haunted grief.
I have to end this,
he mutters, more to himself than to me, his hand tightening around his rifle. His finger hovers dangerously over the trigger of his rifle. My instincts kick in. And I know I have to act fast. I lunge toward him, trying to knock the weapon away, but he's quicker than I expected. We struggle, our breaths heavy in the cold night air, the sounds of our scuffle the only noise in the otherwise silent woods. His strength surprises me, fueled by his frantic emotions. He shoves me back, and I stumble over a root, my balance lost for a crucial second.
That's all he needs.
He raises his rifle, his intentions clear in his wild, pained eyes. I dive to the ground just as the shot rings out, a deafening blast that echoes ominously through the trees. The bullet whizzes past, narrowly missing me, embedding itself in the bark of an old pine. I scramble to my feet, my heart pounding in my ears, and I start running. The underbrush claws at my clothes and skin, but I push through, driven by a primal urge to survive.
Dad, stop! It's me, Ryan!
I shout back as I dodge between the trees. Another shot breaks the silence. Closer this time, sending splinters of wood flying from a nearby tree trunk. It's surreal, being hunted by my own father, a man tormented by grief and loss in his delusions. I don't stop to look back. I can hear him crashing through the forest behind me, his heavy breaths and muttered curses carried on the wind. The terrain is rough, and I'm fueled by adrenaline, but exhaustion is setting in. I need a plan ahead. I see a rocky outcrop and make a split-second decision to head for it. It offers a chance to hide, to catch my breath, and maybe reason with him if he catches up. As I reach the rocks, I slip behind the largest one, my body pressed tight against the cold, damp surface. I hear his footsteps approaching, slow and cautious now. As I press against the rock, trying to calm my racing heart, I can hear Dad's footsteps drawing closer, each step crunching ominously on the forest floor. He's methodical, deliberate, like a hunter stalking his prey.
Come out, Ryan.
Dad's voice is racket, filled with a blend of fury and pain. My heart pounds against my chest, the cold sweat on my back making me shiver against the rough surface of the rock. I know I can't just sit here. It's only a matter of time before he finds me. Taking a deep breath, I peek around the edge of the rock, trying to gauge his position. I see him, rifle raised, scanning the area slowly. This might be my only chance to end this madness without further violence. I need to disarm him, to talk some sense into him if I can. As quietly as I can, I move out from behind the rock, my steps careful to avoid any twigs or leaves that might betray my position. I am almost upon him when a branch snaps under my foot. A sound so trivial, yet so alarmingly loud in the quiet of the woods. Dad whirls around, looking completely unhinged.
Ryan!
He exclaims, his rifle swinging in my direction. Panic overtakes me, and I lunge forward, my hands reaching for the gun. We struggle, the rifle between us, our breaths heavy and erratic.
Dad, please, stop!
I plead, trying to wrestle the gun away. But he's strong, stronger than I expected. In the chaos, the rifle goes off. The sound is deafening, a sharp echo that seems to reverberate off every tree around us. Pain explodes in my abdomen, sharp and burning, like nothing I've ever felt before. I stagger back, my hands instinctively going to the wound. The warmth of my own blood coats my fingers, stark and terrifying. Dad drops the rifle, his eyes wide with horror.
Oh my God! What have I done?
He gasps, rushing to my side as I collapse onto the forest floor. As the pain sears through me, a strange, overpowering energy surges within. It's wild, primal, unlike anything I've ever experienced. Looking down in horror, my hands are no longer hands, but large, hairy, clawed appendages. The transformation is rapid, consuming. My vision blurs, senses heightened, and a raw, guttural growl builds in my throat. In that moment, a flood of understanding washes over me, mingling with the horror of realization. These are the hands of the creature from my nightmares, the creature whose face I can never fully recall because, as I now understand, it is me. What happens next feels detached, as if I'm no longer in control of my own actions. Watching from a distance as my body moves on its own, I turn towards my dad, his face a mask of terror. He stumbles back, his eyes wide with the dawning realization of what his son has become. The forest around us seems to fall silent, holding its breath as the nightmarish scene unfolds. I can hear my own growls, guttural and deep, filling the air with a sound that's both foreign and intimately familiar. The pain in my abdomen fuels a dark, violent urge, an urge that's too strong to resist, with a ferocity that feels both alien and intrinsic. I move towards him. My dad, paralyzed by fear and shock, doesn't run. Maybe he can't. Maybe he doesn't want to. The encounter is brutal and swift, a blur of motion and violence. My dad barely puts up a struggle, as though resigned to his fate. Not that there is anything he can do. The creature that I've become is too powerful, too consumed by the wild instincts surging through me. I tear him apart, limb from bloody limb. My hands, no, my claws, rending through fabric and flesh with disgusting ease. The sound of my dad's screams of tearing fabric and flesh is drowned out by the animalistic growls that echo through the trees. When it's all over, the red mist that had clouded my vision begins to fade, and the fierce, uncontrollable rage that drove my actions subsides. I'm left standing,
my breaths heavy and erratic in the eerie stillness of the forest. The transformation reverses as quickly as it came on, and I find myself back in my human form. My clothes are ripped to shreds, hanging off my frame in tattered remnants. At my feet lies what's left of my dad, his body torn and unrecognizable. I glance down at my abdomen, expecting agony, but instead find my wounds miraculously healed. No sign of the gunshot remains, just a faint scar where I expected a bloody mess. Shock sets in, a numbing disbelief mixed with a gut-wrenching realization of what I've become and what I've done. My hands, now human again, tremble as I look at them, half expecting to see the claws that had so effortlessly ripped through flesh and bone. But there's only blood, my father's blood, against my skin. I stand there for what feels like an eternity, trapped in a nightmare of my own making. Eventually, the shock wears thin, and a cold practicality takes hold. I need to get out of here. I need to cover my tracks, to disappear. Because who would believe this? Who would understand that I didn't choose this? That I'm not a monster by choice? With trembling hands, I do what's necessary. I bury my dad in a shallow grave. The physical act of digging strangely grounding. I cover with leaves and branches a pitiful attempt to hide the brutality of his end. I take a moment, whispering apologies into the wind, knowing full well that nothing I say can change what happened. I leave the forest behind, my mind a whirl of dark thoughts. As I walk, the first hints of dawn brush against the horizon. The sky bleeding a soft pink. It's hauntingly beautiful.
Thank you for listening and delving with me into the dark together.
Please remember to leave a thumbs up and subscribe if you feel so inclined. The more engagement this video gets, the more YouTube will push my content to others.
Thus, the following will grow.
All stories read in this channel will be available on Spotify, iTunes, and just about everywhere else. Links in the description.
Thank you for listening and feeding the cause. We'll be seeing you.